Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Tzadikei Amud Bet, 2 lines from the bottom. Amar Rava. Rava concludes from everything we've said until now. Mereisha Havamino. In the beginning, I used to think, Simona Adifa Mitviut Eina, that having a siman, an actual indication or sign in the individual or in the item is better than simply having recognition of the individual or the item. Daha. Because the halacha that we know from Elul Mitziot, Mehadrina Nevedita B'Simona, when it comes to an Aveda, if you want to get your lost item back, you have to provide Simanim. You have to provide some sort of indication in the item that would identify the item by telling us something unique or special or an identifiable marking within the item. V'lo Mehadrina B'Tviyotena. But if you just say, yeah, that looks like mine, we're not going to give it back to you based on that. Hashta. After I heard all of these memrot that we just saw before with regards to the basar shenitale min ha'ayin, that Rav says that basar shenitale min ha'ayin is problematic because we're afraid of exchanges or being swapped out with basar that's problematic. There we saw that the individuals were able through tviyot eina, through simply recognizing the item, to guarantee that it was the same item. And then we didn't worry about basar shenitale min ha'ayin. So now we see that tviyat eina adifa is even better. Now the word adifa over here is a little bit difficult because it's not necessarily adifa. From the cases that we said before, when they ask the question, they say, did you have any siman in it? And then they said, no. Then they said, do you have a tviyat eina? And they said, yes. All that shows you is that they are equal. It doesn't show you that tviyat ayin is better. It just shows you that it's just as successful or equivalent to a siman. In a second, we'll see a proof in the Gemara that it's even better. But at this point, the only thing that you've proven is that they are equal or just as good. So the word adifa here is not used to mean better than, but adifa can sometimes be used, and that's what the reference is here in the Mesorta Shas. He says, look in Tosafot and Brochot. The Tosafot and Brochot says sometimes the word adifa doesn't necessarily mean better than. Adifa just means equivalent to or just as good as. And that's what it means in this case. It's just equivalent to or just as good as. Siman, because dilo temahochi, if you don't say this, heich suma mutar b'ishto. How is it possible that someone who's blind is able to be together with his wife? How does he know the woman that he is engaging with is actually his wife? The answer is through her voice. He can recognize her voice, and that gives him sufficient recognition, which is the equivalent of tviyat eina, which means that you have a recognition, whether it's a recognition through sound, recognition through vision, that you're able to identify some object. If that's the case, that is what makes the suma mutar with his wife. Ubne adam, eich mutarim b'nishotehem balayla. And then too, how are individuals allowed to be together with their wives at night? How do you know that it is the person's wife? Ella, mitzviyatena de kala. Once again, because of the recognition that the voice of this individual is the person's wife. So, just like over there, tviyat aina de kala works. Sakhanami, so too over here, tviyat aina. That's the mechanism that works in order to identify item. Tviyat aina is not literally. It means identification, not by something that's particular. You couldn't describe that to someone else. You couldn't give that as a siman to someone else. You can only, through your own recognition, pattern this after something you've heard before. A siman is something that you can give to someone else, and they'd be able to identify it objectively and know that that's the case. The reason here that you know that this individual is that individual is because you've heard that voice before, and then that now creates a pattern of recognition in your head. So when you hear it, you go, oh, that's that individual. Tviyat eina is not literally the visual recognition. It means recognition through recurring exposure to something rather than something that is an objective indication that this is that individual. For instance, if someone came to you and said, could you describe the meat? Probably couldn't describe it. You couldn't give anything that would say it. As soon as you see it, it looks like the shape and the piece that you had lost. And sometimes there's a recognition factor where you can't articulate the siman. Someone asks, is that your talus? If someone asks you for simanim, you couldn't give a siman about your talus necessarily. But then you take one look at it and you go, yeah, that's my talus. Amar Rav Yitzchak, Brei de Rav Mesharshia, Teida. That's gotta be true. De'ilu otu beitre, if two individuals come to testify, ve'amre, and they say the following testimony, plani adahai simane, v'hai simane, the individual with the following simanim, katal nafsho, killed someone, he's got a tattoo on his right leg, he's got a scar on his left arm, and he's the one who killed, lo katlinen lech. We will not kill the killer, we will not put him on trial and kill him based on that. That's not sufficient evidence to say that that person is the killer. If they say we recognize him, we know that is so-and-so, then we would kill based on that. So you see that tviat ayin is even better than simanim. So until this point, we said, okay, tviat ayin is equal to or just as good as a siman. Now we have evidence of the fact that it's even better than a siman, because we won't put someone to death based on simanim, but we will based on recognition, based on tviat ayin. Amar Rav Ashi teida. Again, I'll bring you proof to this. Dio amar le'inish lishluchei karya leplanya. If you said to someone who is your messenger, your proxy, go invite so-and-so, dai simane v'hai simane, with the following features, with the following identifying features of this individual, safek yadale, safek lo yadale. You are uncertain as to whether he's actually going to identify this person and find the person you sent him to. V'ilu itle tviat eina v'gave, if you say to him, you know so-and-so, and he recognizes or knows that individual, as soon as he sees him, he knows who he's supposed to be inviting. He knows who he's speaking about. Meaning that recognition is more powerful than simanim. Because the person, when they see somebody that they know, their brain, the individual, automatically then knows what they're seeing and can identify what they are seeing. And therefore, that's something that's definitive. Simanim is when you don't recognize, and now you're trying to find other things to try to identify the individual. And it's now been proven over and over again that when it comes to lineups, people misidentify the person like 70-80% of the time. On the old-fashioned way where they used to identify people, put 5-6 people in a lineup and see if they could identify the person they thought did it, that most of the times that they misidentify the individual. We don't have to be at ANA. People make assumptions. People draw conclusions about what they did see or captured some sort of image in their mind about what they saw. But when they brought it again, it's not clear to them that they saw it. If they knew the individual, if they had some form of recognition that they've seen this individual before, then they, 90% of the time, or probably even more than that, 99% of the time, they will know the individual and recognize the individual. So here you see that tviat eina is even better than simana. Which then brings us to the question, why is it by Aveda that we accept siman as an identifying factor? We will not accept tviat eina by Aveda. It seems to be that Aveda is the exception to the rule, and that there we say siman trumps tviat eina. Now, the Balei Tosafot do point out that we do use tviat eina by Mitzia for Talmidei Chachamim. They're allowed to use it tviat ayin. It only serves to increase the problem here. Is why is it by Aveda that Simanim trump and not tviat ayin? So Rashi makes the claim, Aveda lo yafinan. Aveda is not the paradigmatic case. Because people are driven by monetary gain, and therefore they'll make up the information or they'll lie. And we have no way to know whether they're lying or not. When a person speaks to recognition, you're relying on the individual's integrity to say that they recognize it. You can't test whether he really does or doesn't recognize the individual or the item, because it's all about the pattern or what the person claims they are seeing. So that therefore, that's a certain amount of nemanut that you need to place in an individual. And Rashi says, when it comes to monetary matters, we're not willing to give someone the benefit of the doubt with regards to that, because they're likely to cheat. And that's what Rashi says over here, Damamar, Gezel v'arayot, nafsho shel adam mitavelehem u'mechamedatan. When it comes to Gezel and Arayot, we don't trust people because there's a drive towards those items. People are captured by their Yetzer Hara, and they'll make the wrong choices or the wrong statements, falsely say something. And therefore, we need some objective way to identify whether the person's telling the truth or not. And the only way to do that is through simanim and not through recognition. So that's Rashi's view as to why Avedo is different. The Balei HaTosafot say over here, Tema, Shani Hotam, V'chashdinan Lei, Dilma Mishaker, Shenu Shalom. He says over there it's different because we're afraid he's going to lie about something that's not his. Taha, I can prove that to you, the Lutzurma Mirabonon Mehadrinan Mitzviyatena. So there we return something with the Tviyat Ayin to a Chacham. So then what's the whole point over here of saying that Tviyat Ayin works? If that's true, then even by Aveda, Tviyat Ayin is better than Siman. It's because we're afraid of lying that we give Siman more power. But Tosfot says, on the basic bottom line, it is Tviyat Ayin would work by Aveda as well. So then what was Rava's Havamina to say, I thought that Siman was better than Tviyat Ayin? It's not true. Tviyat Ayin of Aveda is just as good as Siman, if not better. It's just we don't allow people to use it or exercise that right. So then how did Rava even come to that conclusion? So Tosfot over here does what a classic Tosfot would do. There's two types of Tviyat Ayin. There are two different types of way that you can have recognition. It says, over here we're speaking about identification or recognition in a very small way. That we return to a tzurmei derabonan in the case of Naveda, that's b'tviyat eina, dainu tviyat ayin gamur. That's where he has an unequivocal identification, recognition of the item. And you can understand that. You just asked that before. A piece of meat. How much can you recognize about a piece of meat? So over here we're speaking about a tviyat ayin that's not necessarily as objectively strong as a tviyat ayin when you're dealing with an object that has a certain amount of wear and tear on it, a certain amount of identifying features on it that would make it more likely that the person can have full recognition of it. Just like when you see someone, you can really recognize that individual and know it's that individual. Versus something that's a koldo, when you're looking at some object and saying, piece of meat, like in our cases here, yeah, that looks like the piece of meat that I have. So Rova's statement then is in the context of these different tviyotayins. He says, I understand by Aveda that there's a tviyotayin over there that's really strong. That tviyotayin is when you have full recognition of the item. I'm speaking about here is this tviyotayin where it's kind of, yeah, I recognize it. It seems like it's the same one. That type of tviyotayin, he says, I would have thought that that's not enough to be better than simanim. And then I realize from all these cases here that it's just as good as simanim. And then we have others bring even better proof to that, that there's even stronger evidence of the fact that tviyat ayin is great. Now, what's interesting here is that the tviyat ayin that we're speaking about in the remainder of the Gemara seems to be a pretty strong tviyat ayin. Saying we recognize the individual, we're going to kill him based on your recognition, put him to death. That doesn't sound like a tviyat ayin koldu. That sounds like a much stronger tviyat ayin. So I don't know if that's where the Gemara shifts, maybe according to the Balei HaTosafot. And when it says that tviyat ayin is better than simanim, not just equal to simanim, maybe that's only by tviyat ayin gamur. But then it's a little more difficult. How do you bring a proof from these cases to that which we said before? So that makes it that the Gemara's flow is a little bit odd because you're switching the type of tviyat ayin that you're speaking about to develop a pattern. If you see someone once, then sometimes it's very hard to identify them again. If you see somebody on a recurring basis, even if you have less visibility on them, you'll be able to recognize them. So the Gemara says in Brachot, if it's someone that you know well, then you would know them even in the dark. You can't use it as the test to know whether it's Zman Tefillin, because you recognize them so well that you'll even recognize them from further away. But you need to be somebody that you kind of casually know. That's when we use that as the determinant. Again, the more you are familiar with something, the more easier it is for you to identify. So then Tosafot over here asks, V'im Tomar, what about the fact, Alo Masin Isha, Api Simanim? When it comes to Naguna, we allow a woman to get married based on the identification of the husband who passed away, where Edim come and give you the Simanim that they saw on this corpse that was lying there to identify her husband. And we use those simanim, and we let her get married. Okay, that might be something where we're mekil and we let her get married. But Tosafot then says, but if she in her second marriage has an extramarital affair, we're going to put her to death because we assume the second marriage is a good marriage, midoraita. We don't suspect that the first marriage wasn't dissolved completely or there was a safek about it being dissolved because we only use simanim. No, we say that it was completely dissolved. The second marriage is a full-fledged marriage. And therefore, she's going to be put to death based on that if she was mizanet. And Tosfot says, even if we have later on, we have Edim come and say, we know the husband died for sure. They recognized him and they know that he died, but they only come and testify at the before the znut, but not at the time that she got married. We never ask, Shema Balach Hayachai B'shat. We don't say maybe her husband was still alive at the time that these witnesses came and the second marriage wasn't a good marriage. How come Simanim there carries so much weight that we're willing to put someone to death with it? And yet in the case of the murder, we're not willing to use Simanim to identify the murderer. The Tosfot in the end backs away. He says, in that situation, we will not put her to death. And to assume that she's full-fledged married to the second individual. And therefore, we would not call her a fully-fledged, fully-married woman. I mean, obviously, for anything that it relates to halachot, we will assume she's married, with the exception of the death penalty, where it's going to be a capital crime. There, we're going to raise these suspicions, because there, if you have a reasonable doubt, then you're not going to put her to death. In monetary matters, other matters where it's just the robe would suffice, over there we'll let the case go through that she's considered to be married. And he says the same thing. She gets married based on a single aid. You have the same thing, which is that a single aid is a kula in the aguna situation. And that's going to leave suspicions behind that we're not going to put her to death based on that. That's definitely Tosafot to Shita Tam. Tosafot to Shita Tam is that aid echad by aguna is only an institution, the Rabbanon. There's the view of the Ramban and many other Rishonim that Eid Echad by an Aguna is a Din D'Oraita. Because how could the Chachamim come and be Oker something Min HaTorah? Bikum Va'aseh. Tosafot says, yes, you can. Big Dar Milta, when we really need it, we do it. But the Ramban and others are very circumspect about that. They don't like that approach at all because it's just very dangerous just in thinking about that capacity to do something. And therefore, they believe that it must work d'oraita. So for them, an eid echad works mid'oraita, then she would be put to death. But for the Balei Tosafot, where it's only working mid'rabanan, he has the same problem by eid echad as he has by simanim, which is that you're relying on something that does not necessarily work mid'oraita, and therefore the suspicions will remain behind. Then Tosafot says, v'im kein heich makzirim shtar chov v'simanim. How do you ever hand back a shtar chov with simanim? Someone identifies a shtar chov, a debt document, by the simanim, we give it back to them. It's like a Shabbat Aveda, and we use simanim. Now you're going to collect money based on that. Yesh lomar, the lo dami shtar. Shtar is different than monetary matters, because shein adam muchzak bo. Nobody really has true ownership over it, and therefore we return it to whoever gives the identifying marks. A shtar chov doesn't necessarily belong to any one individual. It could be in the hand of the loveh, it could be in the hand of the malveh. Not something that, by definition, belongs to one and we're trying to extract it from the other. In that case, simanim is not enough. In a case where it already is in the possession of an individual, and then you want to move the item from one to the other, there simanim are not going to suffice. But in a case where you have an item that's not inherently belonging to any individual, there simanim will be sufficient to give it to one of two individuals, and that'd be okay. The Tosafot says that it doesn't work by real monetary matters. Someone comes along and says, you have my item in your house, and they didn't come and give the simanim of that item. We're not going to move that item based on simanim. That's a monetary matter. Simanim is not sufficient to move such an item from the possession of an individual. On the other hand, here, where it's not in the grasp of any individual, their simanim will be sufficient to give it to one of two or one of many possible owners of the item. The Tosafot here is trying to really work out where simanim work, where they don't work, and how powerful they are. And over here, we're just really seeing how we are neutralizing in many ways the power of simanim. We're saying that it's not the best type of evidence. We use it in certain cases because we want to ensure that there's no lying. People aren't cheating, so we use it as a way to get objective truth about objects that people might have an incentive to lie about. But otherwise, simanim don't have the power that a tviat ayin has, that real recognition has in these instances. Next Mishnah. Hanotel gidin asher, person who takes that gidin asher, tzarich shitolet kulo, you have to take the entirety of the gidin asher out. As Rashi says, yichateta acharav, you need to dig in and pull it all out. which makes it a Stam Mishnah like Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir is the one who made demands that you go after it and dig it out from all of its locations. And as the Baal Tosfot put out, that means that we have a Stam Mishnah now on Chatita like Rabbi Meir, and we have a Stam Mishnah before about Nemanut like Rabbi Yehuda, that they are Nemanim, the butchers. So Tosfot's pointing out that Rabbi is picking the Shito that he makes into the Stam Mishnah over here, obviously because he thinks that those are the Piskei Halach, or that's the right way to go. So over here he's Sotem Kerabi Meir, that you have to go and dig out the entirety of the Git. You only have to take out that which is considered to be the Git and Asher. Obviously he thinks that there's less than the whole thing being the Git and Asher. And we've seen that from Yehuda before, which is Gomomo Himashofi. All you have to do is slice off the area where the Kaf HaYerech is. When you slice that area off, the Git that comes off of that area, that's the Git and Asher that needs to be removed. Ochel mi Git and Asher. A person who eats from Git and Asher, Kizayit, Kizayit's worth, Sofeget Arbaim. He gets Malkot for eating it. Achalo v'ein bo Kizayit. If he eats it and there's not a Kizayit worth of what he eats, Chayav, he's still Chayav. We already saw this earlier, that's because it's a Birya. It's its own entity. Since it's its own entity, that's sufficient to make you Chayav. Achal mizekezayit, umizekezayit, if you ate from what seemingly are two different gidanashes, and neither of them had a kezayit, and then they add up to a kezayit, when you eat both of them, or the way that Rashi said back on Pei Gimel, the situation is one of them is a kezayit, and one of them is not a kezayit, then, sofeg shmonim, you get 80 malkot. 80 malkot for each of the gidanashes, either because if both of them are not a kezayit, that's because the Shita believes that even without a Kazayat, you're Chayav for Git and Asher. Or because one of them was a Kazayat, which you're Chayav for, and one of them was less than a Kazayat, which you're also Chayav for. That's why you get Shmonim. You don't marry, you only get 40. Either because you had two less than Kazayatim that added up to a Kazayat, so you only have one Kazayat. Or going to Rabbi Yehuda, if you had one Kazayat and one less than a Kazayat, the one that was a Kazayat, you get Malkot for. The one was less than a Kazayat, you're not going to get Malkot for. This is just reinforcing their positions with regards to the difference between a Kazayat and a Birya. Bar Piyule, Rashi says it's a name of an individual. He was a Menaker. Abakoy Kameh de Shmuel. He was working in front of Shmuel, become Menaker Atmo. And he was doing Nikur. He was taking out the fats and the Gidin Hashem from a side of meat from the Yerech, from the leg. Havakagoyim lay. He did what we would assume is like Rabbi Yehuda, Gaim lay min Ashofi. He sliced off the area of the Gidin Hashem where Rabbi Yehuda would have thought. Amar leish, Mosestem, Chavat Beit Fe. Go deeper. You gotta get more out. That's not enough what you took out. Hashta lochazitach, Svita leisura. He says, had I not seen you and watched you, you would have been feeding me Isur. Shmuel is a little bit taken aback that this is the Menaker that provides the meat around town or takes care of him. Shmuel says, good thing I caught you, because otherwise you'd be feeding me Isura. Irtat, Bar Yule was so taken aback and was so nervous about what Shmuel said to him, Nafal Sakina Miyode, the knife fell out of his hand. He was shaking from what happened here. He thinks basically Shmuel is accusing him of feeding trefot to people until this point in time. Till Shmuel caught him and said, you're doing it wrong. That means that he was doing it wrong all along. So he's really shaken up about this. The way Rashi says it, that he thinks he's being accused of being an Amaretz or a Rosha, that he's choshed, that this individual doesn't do it correctly. Amalei, so Shmuel then says to them, lo tirtat, don't get so nervous. Don't get so upset about this. I'm not calling you an Amaretz. I'm not calling you a Rosha. But the Ori Lecha, Rabbi Yehuda Ori Lecha, whoever taught you, just paskin for you like Rabbi Yehuda. It happens to be that I paskin like Rabbi Meir. So he says, what you were doing wasn't wrong. You were doing it according to Rabbi Yehuda. What I want is you to do it according to Rabbi Meir, because I hold like Rabbi Meir. So don't be upset. We don't think you did anything wrong, just that we don't paskin that way. And the person who told you that we do paskin that way has a different view. Now, this is interesting, just from a halachic standpoint, it's true. You see this in the Mishnayot, then you later see it in the Gemara itself, and even in the modern day, Piskei Halacha, you see the same thing, which is that there is a period of time in which there are coexisting positions. and both of them are accepted the halacha, and at an eventual point, there comes to a transition, or you reach a intersection, by which the psak halacha becomes identified by one of these two parties, and then you start to say that anything else is not acceptable. And we saw that before with regards to the ne'manut of the tabachim. We said the original paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, then they switched to Rabbi Meir. And even when they switched to Rabbi Meir, they wouldn't trust the tabachim until they forgot about Rabbi Yehuda. A very interesting example, but it's the same idea, which is, while people think there are two options, you have to worry about what people are doing. Because they think there are people passing like Rabbi Yehuda, people passing like Rabbi Meir. And so some people do like Rabbi Yehuda, some do like Rabbi Meir. And if you tell me I have to do like Rabbi Meir, he might think, why do I have to do that? I can hold like Rabbi Yehuda. Once you reach that intersection where you say that everybody holds like Rabbi Meir, and there's no question at all, then at that point, we don't worry about people thinking about Rabbi Yehuda or thinking about Rabbi Yehuda's psak. So here, you see there's a period of time in which Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir's positions are both accepted. And there's some people passing like Rabbi Yehuda, some people passing like Rabbi Meir. Eventually, they're going to reach a point where there's a single psak that says that this is the rule, and then any other option is not acceptable. Over here, Shmuel still sees Rabbi Yehuda's position as being a viable option for psak halacha over here. He sees that as being a reasonable psak halacha. He just happens to hold like Rabbi Meir. So that's a point in time where they still haven't reached in that point of decisiveness, that halacha is like one or the other, but here it's still up in the air. Anytime you have an halachic issue, that's what happens. You have people who give their views about the issue, and then you have differences, and reasonable differences in the psak halacha, until eventually there's an acceptance of one of the two positions, three positions, four positions, whatever it is, that becomes the halacha according to the rove, and slowly but surely, the other views are dropped by the wayside. But just interesting, in this scenario, you have some sort of evidence of this type of halachic process that takes place. So I'm Rav Sheshet. My deshakal bar piule deoraita le Rav Yehuda. That which bar piule took off was the deoraita part of the Gidon Hesher according to Rav Yehuda. Michlau deshier derabonan. From here it sounds like he left over that which was required me derabanan for Rav Yehuda. If that's the case, then ela deorile keman orile. Whoever gave him the psak halacha, who is he paskening like? He's not paskening like Rabbi Meir, clearly. And he's even not paskening like Rabbi Yehuda. If you gave him psak halacha, you have to take off of Rabbi Yehuda what's doraita and derabonan. You can't just leave over the derabonan. That means that he's not following any position. Ela amar Rav Sheshet, my deshakal bar piule deoraita de Rabbi Meir. What Rav Sheshet says is what bar piule took off is what's considered mi doraita for Rabbi Meir. My deshier, and what he left behind was the rabbonon, the Rabbi Meir, the rabbinic part of Rabbi Meir. De'i Rabbi Yehuda, afilu mi derabanan shari. Because according to Rabbi Yehuda, even mi derabanan, the residual is mutar. And from here, you would conclude that the part de oraita of Rabbi Meir is what Rabbi Yehuda thinks you need to remove. Now, you could believe Tosafot does not like this and rejects this, but you could think here that Rabbi Yehuda also has a doraita on derabonan. That's what it sounds like from the first way we had Rav Sheshet laid out. Is that Rabbi Yehuda has a doraita on derabonan? And what you could say is that Rabbi Yehuda's doraita on derabonan equal Rabbi Meir's doraita. And therefore, if you held like Rabbi Yehuda, and you did Rabbi Yehuda entirely, and took off their doraita on derabonan, you would end up with the doraita of Rabbi Meir. That's what Bali Tosafot said you could have said for this. He does not like this. He says, because now you're expanding the number of machlokot that we have midoraita. And then you have to explain why Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir have a different din deoraita with regards to Gidon Hesher. And that we don't find. We don't find any indication of that. And therefore, what he suggests over here is that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't have any din derabonan here in Gidon Hesher. He has deoraita. And his deoraita equals Rabbi Meir's deoraita. Now we have a Tana Kama of Rabbi Yehuda, which we'll see in a second, who disagrees. So then we'll have two different views, midoraita in Gidon Hesher. Well, three views. Even when you add in the Rabbanan. But deoraita, there are only two views. And that means Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir agree what is considered to be Gidon Hesher, midoraita, rather than saying what we suggested before, and which is plausible based on this Gemara, that Rabbi Yehuda has deoraita the Rabbanan, and that equals the deoraita of Rabbi Meir. But then you'd have to come up with an explanation for why Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda have different amounts of deoraita Gidon Hesher. And that we don't have any evidence of, or we don't have any explanation for that. That's why the Bali Tosafot would say it must be that they both believe midoraita, it's the same Gidon Hesher. Amar Shmuel. Lo asra Torah ela shalakaf bilvad. The Torah only requires to take off that which is on the kaf. And as Rashi describes here, and we've seen before, the kaf hayerech is the part of suveivet akulit. It's the flesh that surrounds the uppermost bone of the leg. If you remember, you have the three leg bones. The top leg bone, which is the one that inserts into the hip bone or to the pelvis, that bone, there is basar that goes around it, that protrudes. It has shape to it, like a kaf. So they get an asher that is found in the kaf, vidavuk la'etzem, that is connected to the bone, vagid aruch, and the gid is very long, shochev mikzato agabi oto basar, a portion of which goes through that flesh of the kaf. That's the gid an asher, or the gid hapnimi, that we've spoken about until now. That part that is in the kaf is what you need to remove. Now, the Baal Tosafot indicate that Shmuel doesn't necessarily hold this way, because Shmuel just told the Menacher, why aren't you cleaning it out completely like Rabbi Meir? So he clearly thinks that this is not sufficient, and he holds like Rabbi Meir. So the Tosafot says he's saying it velo sfirle. He doesn't hold like this. He's just telling us the view of the Tana Kama, which is based on the Pasuk, Shnemar al kafayerech, that which is on the kafayerech, that's what is restricted from you consuming. Amara Papa Kitanaye. Shmuel's statement is not definitive. I mean, everybody holds that al kafayerech is the only thing, because we have dissenting opinions. We have a machloket tanaim with regards to this matter. Achalo ve'inbo kezayit chayav. If he eats it and it doesn't have a kezayit in it, you are chayav. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, ad sheheibo kezayit. Until it has a full kezayit in it. My time of the Rabbonon. What's the reasoning behind the Rabbonon's position over here that less than a kezayit is enough? Mar says, biryahi. It is a entity. It's a full entity. And a full entity you're going to be chayab for. So here, when you take out the whole gid anasheh and eat it, you're chayab because it's a birya. Full entity is enough to make you chayab. Rabbi Yehuda achilak tibbe. The pasuk says, Al kein lo yuchlu b'nei Yisrael et gid anasheh. Achila in the Torah, the definition of achila is a kezayit. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda, the fact it says achila by gid anasheh means that the minimum shiur is a kezayit. Berabonon, what do they do with the word achila? Hai achila dechit bei arba v'chamisha zeitim v'achal chad kezayit mechayev. That's coming to teach you that even if the gid anasheh has multiple kezeitim in it, and you would have thought until you eat the entire gid anasheh, you are not chayav, this achila comes to teach you that a kezayit is sufficient in order to make you chayav. So, Rabbi Yehuda, how does he know that? He knows that because it says, me'asher al kafayerech nafka. Because it says, that which is on the kafayerech. So there is a portion of it that you will be chayav for, even though they might be much longer gid anasheh than just that area. Rabbanan, how mi bayile the kiddush Shmuel. Rabbanan need this for the other din of Shmuel. Damer Shmuel lo asra Torah elo shel kafayerech. They only think that which is asur is on a kafayerech. So what's clear here is the Rabbanan believe the only part of the gid anasheh that is problematic is al kafayerech, and Rabbi Yehuda clearly disagrees with that because he's using al kafayerech for something else, which means that he doesn't have it available to teach you the din of Shmuel. Rabbi Yehuda, hayerech tiv, dekula yerech. It has the hayayidia, which indicates that you have hayerech, the entirety of the yerech, not just the kaf hayerech. Rabbanon, how the poshit isurei bekula yerech. So now this is somewhat difficult to understand, because the Rabbanon just said that the gid anasheh is only in the kaf hayerech. So how can you say this is the one that the Isur applies to the whole Yerech? It doesn't apply to the whole Yerech, it only applies to that one small location. So the language is clearly difficult, and the Baal Tosafot commenting on this say, V'Rabbeinu Gershom Ktiv, Hamashich Bekulei Yerech, that the word is not that it's Isurei, the word Isur doesn't appear in his Girsa. Rabbeinu Gershom has the Mashich Bekulei Yerech. It's the Gid that goes through the entirety of the leg. V'yesh li'ashev l'shon Isurei, Tosafot says, well, we can figure out the word Isur and get it in there by saying the following. The gid that is problematic goes through the whole leg. That doesn't mean the entirety of it is problematic. It just means the one that is problematic goes through the whole leg. That was one of the identifying features that we had about the Gidon HaSheh, is that it goes all the way from the point where it leaves the spinal cord, all the way down to the bottom of the leg. And the Gid HaPnimi was the only one that had it. The internal Gid went from the spine all the way down to the foot. Lafuke Chitzon, Delo, to exclude the Erech Chitzon that doesn't have that feature. The Gid HaChitzon ends much earlier than that, doesn't extend through the entirety of the leg. And that's what they learn out from the HaYerech. Ul'olam shalakaf. But the only part that is asur is the part by the kaf. By kaf mi bayile the mute of. Don't they need the word kaf to come exclude the of? The late bay kaf. Because we know the reason that Gidon HaSheh does not apply to of is not because it doesn't have a Gidon HaSheh. It does have a Gidon HaSheh just like an animal. The reason it doesn't apply, the Gemara said before, is because it doesn't have a kaf. The Gidon HaSheh in the bird has flat flesh on it. It does not have a bulge that goes around the thigh in that area that makes it have a shape of a kaf. That's actually the distinction why we said that a bird does not have a din of Gidon HaSheh. So that we use the word kaf already in the Me'uteo. So now the Gemara says, Shrei kaf ktive. They don't have a problem with that because the word kaf appears twice in the pasuk, and that solves their problem. It says, Al kein lo yuchlu b'nei Yisrael Gidon HaSheh ashel kaf hayorech. Ara yom zeh, that's one time kaf. Ki naga b'kaf yerech Yaakov b'Gidon HaSheh. The word kaf is mentioned twice. One kaf to teach you only that shape, not the bird. The other kaf to tell you that's the only location where it's asur, nothing else. And then they have hayerech to tell you which of the gidin is the Gidon HaSheh, the one that goes through the entirety of the leg, the pnimi, and not the chitzon. And the word achila comes to teach you that even if you only eat something that's a kezayit, from something that's more than one kezayit, you are chayav for that single kezayit. That's the view of the Rabbanon or the Tanakama of Rabbi Yehuda. They clearly believe, like what Shmuel said before, only that which is on the kaf hayerech is asur. Rabbi Yehuda, on the other hand, believes that, first of all, the word hayerech comes to teach you that it's the kula yerech. The entirety of the yerech is asur. It's not just the part that's on the kaf. How far that goes, again, we spoke about before, where the question for Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir, how far is Doraita, how much is the Rabbanon? So it's clear that the Kanokneot, the smaller nerve endings that branch off of it, are only mi Rabbanon. They are not mi Doraita. And the question of Chatita, how far you need to go after it, of course, part of that's the Rabbanon for Rabbi Meir, but part of that is what Rabbi Yehuda believes. And obviously Rabbi Yehuda believes it's a gomomom ashofi. You have to take off that whole slice of that area, and when you take off the slice of that area, that's going to be more than just what's in the kaf hayerech. That gives you a much larger Gidon HaSheh that is asur, and that's what comes from hayerech. Anything that's on that yerech, when you slice it off, whatever comes off in the yerech, when you cut it, that's going to be considered to be the Gidon HaSheh. And then he uses the word achila to teach you, only if it has a kezayit will you be chayav. If it's less than a kezayit, you would not be chayav. And then he uses al kaf hayerech to teach you that even if it's not the whole part of the gid that is asur, nevertheless you are chayav for it, so you don't need multiple kezayitim or the whole gid, even a portion of it, as long as it is a kezayit, is chayav. Now the Baal HaTosfot wants to ask over here, how come and by many other items like nimala and shvatzim that have the word achila written by them, over there Rabbi Yehuda does not demand a kezayit like he does over here? So the Baal HaTosfot would say that the word achila in all those cases does what the Rabbanon think it does over here. Which is for Rabbi Yehuda over there, achila comes to teach you that if it's a kezayit mitoch, a larger item, you're going to be chayav for it, even though it's not the entirety of the item. Which means that it's the lesser of either a birya b'fnei atzma, the entire organism, or a kezayit worth of that organism are going to make you chayav. And that's what the word achila means in those other instances. But over here, where Rabbi Yehuda already learns that from al-kaf hayerech, from told to the totality of the yerech, al-kaf hayerech teaches you even a portion of it you're going to be chayav for. Now the word achila is extraneous over here, and that's why he uses achila over here to teach you only a kezayit, and no less than a kezayit you're going to be chayav. So where he doesn't have that limud in the other places, then the word achila teaches him, like the Rabbanan say over here, a kezayit mitoch, the whole, you are chayav for. But over here, where you already learned that from al-kaf hayerech, then the word achila is just to teach you a kezayit and no less than a kezayit. The Baal HaTosfot here asks a very fundamental question about birya b'fnei atzma. as to when we invoke this principle and when do we not invoke this principle. How come, and he gives a list of items where we do say that a birya is enough to make you chayav, including Eber Minachai, Of Tameh, Gidanasheh, and Sheretz. All of those, a birya bifnatzma is sufficient to make you chayav, and you don't need a kezayit. On the other hand, when it comes to things like Nevela, or it comes to Tevel, over there we say that you need a full shiur. It's not enough that you have a birya bifnatzma. And what creates that distinction to know when it does apply and when it doesn't apply? The Balei HaTosafot explain here that when the Torah says don't eat the gid, or don't eat the of tameh, or don't eat the ever menachai, or don't eat the sheretz, there the Torah doesn't specify the size of the item. And therefore, when it says don't eat it, it means don't eat it, no matter how big or how small it is. And therefore, irrespective of its size, you are chayav for eating it because there's a defined entity that is asur, and eating that entity is asur, and the Torah never gives you the size of that entity. On the other hand, when it comes to items like nevela or tevel, those items have a shame that has application even over an area that's not the whole item. Meaning that when you have an animal that dies, it has a shame nevela even for a piece of it. It's not a nevela in its entirety, and only if the whole animal is a nevela. Even a piece of a meat from a dead animal is also classified as a nevela. And so therefore, when you say lo tochal nevela, it means a piece of nevela, and a piece of nevela has to be a meat, that minimum standard of a kezayit. And the same thing is true by tevel. Tevel doesn't mean that it has to be a particular whole item. It's not describing an item. It's describing the status of something, just like nevela is. And therefore, when you're describing a status, you can't say whether it's big or small. It just means that you can't eat, and eat is defined by a kezayit. When you define the item, and you say this item is asur to eat, then you can say we're indifferent to the size, and then no matter how big or how small it is, you're going to be chayav for it, and that's where the Indian of birya comes up. That's the view of the Balei HaTosafot. In dealing with this issue later on, the Balei HaTosafot, dealing with the sheet of Rabbi Shimon with regards to Tevel, brings an alternative view, which actually is the view of many of the other Rishonim, as to what the distinction revolves around. And that is that things that are born with that problem, that have that isur from the time they are created, that's something that you can say birya about. On the other hand, items that only gain that status later on, or it's a change in status, there we don't say birya. So by all these items, by of tameh, sheretz, gidanasheh, and by eber minachai, those are issues that exist from the moment the item is created. And therefore, over there, we invoke the principle of birya, and anything of any size is going to be problematic if it's the whole entity. As long as it's shalem, you're going to be chayav for it. On the other hand, when it comes to nevela, that's a status that's gained by the animal. After it dies, it turns into a nevela. Or by tevel, once you reach the gemar of that item, then the chiyuv to tevel devolves upon it, and you have to be mafrish trumot and masrot. But the item is not created in a state of tevel. The item is not created in a state of nevela. That's only a status that's gained later on. And that's the difference, according to many other Rishonim, as to when we invoke birya bifnatzma versus cases where we require a minimum of a kezayit. Now, there are those that point out that over here, with regards to the gidanasheh, the chachamim say that it's a birya bifnatzma. But they also do say that the yerech runs all the way from the spinal cord to the bottom of the leg. And then they also note the fact that the only part that's asur is al-kaf ha-yerech. So then what exactly is the birya bifnei atzma that we're speaking about over here? So then if you eat that section that's just the sur, what birya did you eat? You only ate a portion, just that section that's a sur of the totality of the gidan asheh. According to Tosafot, the hagdara of birya bifnei atzma is anything that is a sur, no matter what the size is, then that's classified as a birya. Then you could say al kaf ha-yerech, no matter how big that is, that's called a birya. But according to those Mishonim that believe that the Hagdara has to do with an entire entity that is a sur from the outset, from the time that it's born, then how do you deal with the fact that the Gid HaNasheh here is just a section of Isur from an entirety of a Gid that is out there? So again, there are two approaches to dealing with this. Either is to say that when you ate the Gid over here, you ate the entirety of the Gid, and in eating the entirety of the Gid, you ate the Birya, plus the part that was a sur within that Birya that you ate. And that's what makes you chayav over here, because you ate a birya, and within the context of that birya, you got the piece that was asur. And therefore, shalem means literally, shalem, the whole gid. Although, based on the Ramah, or the way the Ramah describes the gid and asheh, he calls even the part that is asur to be a birya bifnei atzma. And what you have to say is that the Torah defined that as an entity because that's the part that it made us sore. Since that's the part it made us sore, that's the entity. That's the birya. And that's considered to be shalem, even though there's a longer extension of the gid, both above it and below it. Nevertheless, that's negdar kibirya. And if that's the case, it's considered to be shalem and a birya when you eat it, and you'll be chayav for that. All right. So now we move over to issues of tarovet. And over here it says, Yerach shnit bashel bagid, if you have a whole side or a leg in which the gid and asher was cooked into it, if it can flavor the entirety of the leg, then it's problematic. If the leg is sufficiently large, by which then the flavor will not have impact on the leg, then it's not asura because the gid wasn't sufficient to change the nature, the remainder of that which is there. This is what is otherwise known as notain tam, which is the way that we know whether flavor has been passed. That's when it affects the item. If the flavor is not passed, it doesn't affect the item. Ketzad misharinota. How do we know or how do we test the fact that it gave over flavor? Again, that's for two reasons. Either because gid and asher, according to some, is not notain tam. According to those that it is notain tam, it gives maybe the same flavor as the basar. So how do you know, min b'mino, how do you know when the distinct flavor has been given over? So you do that, basar belefet. You make it as if it is meat inside of turnips. So we look at the leg as being a bunch of turnips, and we view the gid and asher as being a piece of meat. And the question is, does the meat then flavor the turnips in this instance? So that would be the test to know whether it is impactful or not. Rashi over here makes the comment, Dishirim alocha le Moshe Misinai. All shirim come from alocha le Moshe Misinai. That's a misorah midoraita from Moshe Rabbeinu. Ugmiri, and the misorah that we have, the bahachi misharina. These are the items that you use to test it. Because Rashi notes, if you use other vegetables, you would have a different outcome. The fact that you pick turnips, that's part of the alocha le Moshe Misinai, of the way to test these items to know whether they are flavoring or not flavoring, because if you pick kruv or kaflot, you would come out with a different answer. How do you know to use turnips? That's the locha, the Moshe Misinai. Now this presumes a very important factor, which is tam ki ikar. This is something that we learned together in Avodah Zarah, which is that flavor is the equivalent to the actual isur being there. And therefore when flavor is given over, we assume the item is like it's there and the isur exists in reality. Even only the thing that you have is an intangible item called flavor. That's what's called tam ki ikar. There are many Rishonim that believe tam ki ikar is d'oraita. That then has been a Torah. And if you believe such, then this makes a lot of sense. That you have a locha l'moshe mitzinai defines for you when is tam ki ikar applicable or how do you apply it. According to Rashi in other places in Chas, Rashi believes tam ki ikar is only a din d'rabbanan, not a din d'oraita. Then you have a strange outcome over here, which is, you have tam ki ikar midrabbanan, and then you have a din d'oraita, halacha l'moshe mitzinai, had a test, tam ki ikar. Why do you need such a test if it's only a din d'rabbanan? Why would you have a halacha l'moshe mitzinai for it? So, there are those that answer that Rashi's saying this according to those that say tam ki ikar d'oraita, or others suggest that the Gemara here in Kulin already established that here we're speaking about kodoshim. And in the world of Kodoshim, everybody agrees, tam ki ikar d'oraita, because the Torah explicitly says that when you have a flavor from one korban that goes into another korban, or goes into utensils, it has impact on those utensils, or has impact on the other korban. So that, everybody agrees, tam ki ikar d'oraita by Kodoshim. If you say we're speaking about Kodoshim, then you understand the halacha, the Moshe Misinai over here, because then you have a din d'oraita that has a definition of halacha, the Moshe Misinai. Now, Tosfot over here says, Lo begid luchudei misharinan. He says, when we're testing here whether there's flavor from the gid and asher, you can't just say we test based on the gid itself. Dibikadei klipa shisvivav misayeya legid leasur. Because not only do we look at the gid itself, but we look at a kadei klipa. The amount of a thin film or skin around it is also included. So from the point in time where you salt it already, then anything around it also is then required to be taken off. And when you salt something, that causes a leaching of whatever that item is to the areas that are directly around it. And that means that by gid and asher, originally all you have to do is take out the gid and asher. That was the only thing that is asur. Once you've already salted it with the gid and asher in there, then the flavor or whatever the gid and asher exudes in terms of isur applies not only to the gid and asher itself, but even to a kdei klipa, the amount of a skin's worth or a thin film around it is also included now in the itzer that's there. So the fact that the Mishnah only says you measure the Gidin Asher, Tosfot says, doesn't really mean the Gidin Asher. It means the Gidin Asher plus Kedei Klipa around it. That's what you're measuring at a 60-to-1 ratio. Now, that's interesting only because Mishnah doesn't mention it, but then that actually works well for certain opinions in the Rishonim. And Tosfot brings, according to the Rabbeinu Ephraim, who says that the concept of Chaticha Naseit Nevela, that once something is considered to be Asur, it takes on the shape of Nevela. It becomes Asur in its entirety, not just the amount of the Notein Tam. He says that only applies to Basar V'Chalav. It's a unique din in Basar V'Chalav, and doesn't apply to other Isurim. Then our Mishnah is not problematic for him, because our Mishnah says it's the Gid and the Gid alone. The Klipa that's around the Gid is Asur because it was Notein Tam to the Klipa that's around it. But that Notein Tam doesn't make it into something that's Asur. Chaticha Naseit Nevela doesn't come into full-fledged Nevela now, so it's counted towards the Isur that you have to now check for. It's the same Notein Tam. So according to the Rabbeinu Ephraim, our Mishnah is understandable. According to those that believe that once there's Tam that leaches into that area that's around it, that makes that into Isur as well. Chaticha Naseit Nevela. Even in areas outside of Basar B'Chalav, you're going to have to explain our Mishnah, meaning that it's not just the Gid that we're measuring. Measuring the Gid and the Klipa around it for the 60 times. Tosfot says, it's very interesting. Here you have a mixture of many different items over here. Rotev, you have this gravy that's in there. You have other pieces of meat or yerachim that are in there. And you have that one piece that has the Gidin Asher in it. And the only thing that we say that allows you to overcome the problem of Notein Tam is that one yerach. The one yerach that has the Gidin Asher in it, that's the only thing we measure by. We don't allow the gravy to help you. We don't allow the other yerachim that are there to help you out. He says, that works well according to Rashi. Because Rashi in Perakol Basar, later on in the Masechta on Kuf Yud Chet, says that the only time that we say that you include everything in the pot to determine the Notein Tam is when you put the cover on or mix it up, then they become a single entity. Once they're a single entity, then you look at the entire grouping over there to decide whether you have Notein Tam. But until that point in time, every entity remains independent, and therefore the only thing you're going to look at here in Notein Tam is that particular piece. And therefore, according to Rashi, it makes sense that that's just speaking about that one particular yerech, and not the gravy, and not the other yerechayim that are there, because that's the only thing that matters until it's fully mixed. So therefore, our case here is a case where you didn't mix it up, and that's understandable. But according to the Ri, who disagrees with Rashi, and thinks that even when you don't mix it up, that it is allowed to use the entirety of the pot to consider it for the bitul of Notein Tam, when it is partially in the gravy, you don't need to mix it up in order for the gravy to count towards the Notein Tam or count towards the 60 times over there. So then how is he going to explain the difference between our case over here, where we don't allow the gravy to count, and the case over there where you do allow the gravy to count? Since that over there in the Gemara on Kuf Yud Chet is when the piece is entirely out of the gravy. And that's why you need to mix it in order for the gravy to count towards the 60-to-1, because otherwise the piece is not touching the gravy, and the gravy has no impact on it. That's why covering it or mixing it then brings the gravy into the picture. But in our case over here, we're speaking about a case where it's partially in the gravy. Once it's partially in the gravy, then the gravy can count towards the 60 times that you require. And therefore he says over here, the Notein Tam, it means that it has to have enough flavor that it affects the pieces and the rotev. And both of them are counted towards the 60 times that's over here. So it's a major machloket as to what you view as the tarobet over here. What is concluded in the calculation of what is considered the 60-to-1? According to Rashi, it's just going to be the yerech, because until you mix them up or you cover them up and make them into a single entity, the remainder of the items that are there or the gravy that's there have no impact on the 60-to-1. On the other hand, the Ri says as soon as you have any liquid or something that's causing them to be together or a single unit, then the Notein Tam applies to the entirety of what's there, and that'll be the case here as well. The reason that on Kuf Yud Chet we need you to mix it up is because over there it was entirely out of the gravy. And until it's in the gravy, it doesn't share the flavor with the other items, and therefore Notein Tam is then only going to be with that one particular item, not with the other items that are included in the pot. Now, Gidin Asher, Shnit Basel Im Hagidin. If a Gidin Asher, and then many other gidim that were mutar, they're cooked together. Zman shemakiro, if you know which one it is so that you can take it out, then benotein tam. You just need to check whether it flavored the other gidim or not. And then you can determine whether the other gidim are asurim or mutarim. Bim lav, if not, kulan asurim. Then all of them are problematic, because any one of them that you take out, you have to say, maybe this is the one that is asur. Now, you'll have to then ask, why isn't it batel berov? If you have materially more gidim apeter than isur, why isn't that sufficient? So that might go back to, and once the Gemara will discuss this, about birya. Maybe something that is a entity by itself cannot be batel. If it can't be batel, even if it is a rove that's overwhelming it, it's not going to help you in this instance. Barotev benotein tam. And when it comes to the gravy that's there, it's also affected by a notein tam. V'chein chaticha shel nevela, and so too with a piece of meat that is a nevela. V'chein chaticha shel dag tamei, or a piece of fish from a non-kosher fish. Shinit bashloim chatichot, that was cooked with other pieces of kosher fish, or other pieces of kosher meat. Bizman shemakiran, if you know which is the piece of meat that is not kosher, the fish that's not kosher, you take it out, and the remainder you test, but no tein tam. Vim lav, if not, kulan asurot. Again, you have the same problem. Why are they all asur? Why don't we say batel berov? Again, we have to discuss that in the Gemara. Farotev, but no tein tam. The gravy is always been no tein tam, because there you can't confuse the gravy with the thing that is asur. The thing that's asur is flavoring the gravy, it's not the gravy itself. So you know for sure when you're eating the gravy, you're not eating the isur. Just a question of you're eating the flavor that came from the isur. Alright, Amar Shmuel. Lo shanu el shenit bashel ba. It's only true if you cook the erech together with the gidon asher. Aval nitzla ba, if you roast it, kolef v'ochel. You can take off the meat around it and eat it, ad shemegiel agid. Keep peeling off the meat, eating it, until you reach the point of the gid. We don't worry about the problem of no tein tam. And Tosfot says that Shmuel's din is somewhat obvious, because we have a din that meliach areihu kiroteach. When you salt an item, it's the equivalent of it being cooked or heated up, and the Gemara says that it's kiroteach tzli. It's the equivalent of roasting the item. So then, if salting it was the equivalent of roasting it, then if roasting was asur, then Meliach would already make it asur, and you wouldn't need to say that when it was cooked, that it became problematic. You wouldn't need a cook to get an asher in it. Once you salted it to kasher it, that would be enough to make it asur. The fact that we don't say that shows you that tzli is okay. So the Tosfot says, we would have known this din even without Shmuel. What do I need Shmuel for? The fact that the Mishnah only says after it's cooked that it's problematic, that shows you that tzli must be okay, because you have to do salting before you cook it, otherwise it wouldn't be kasher. The fact that you already did salting and that wasn't asur shows you that tzli is just fine. So he says, what do I need you to tell me this din? The Tosfot says, v'yishlamar d'kamashmalan, d'lon emar nidbashal d'matnitin hainu nitzle. He says, so that you don't come to the conclusion that cooking in our Mishnah means roasting. Because the word bishul is sometimes used interchangeably with tzli. He brings the fact that they used to even bashel the carbon of Pesach, where we know it's clearly roasted and not cooked, but they call it cooking. Or in the Mishnah in Nidorim, you also have a similar thing where someone takes a nether not to eat from Dabar Mubushal, that in subsumed in that is also tzli, something that is roasted. So in a greater sense, bishul could also include tzli. So what Shmuel is coming to tell you is that's not the case in our Mishnah. Bishul and tzli are different dinim, and tzli does not have this issue that bishul has. Bishul causes flavor to move everywhere and to come out. Roasting does not have that impact in terms of moving flavor. Now, it does have a small impact, and that the Baal Tosfot would say over here, that you can't eat all the meat around the gid until you reach the gid. Lav davka shetigid l'mamash. It's not until you get just to the gid. Da'atzarich sheniach kadei klipa. You have to leave over a little area around it, because that's samuch the gid. Va'felu kadei nitila atzarich sheniach. Maybe even more than just the klipa. The amount that's kadei nitila. That area you have to leave over, because lo ashkrem shumakom she'sagig zli v'klipa. Says we never find that's enough with a klipa. You need a kadei nitila, which is a little thicker area to take off. So he's saying when the Gemara says here you can eat all the way to the gid, it doesn't literally mean the gid, it means the gid plus the kadei nitila. But it means the robe of the meat is okay. And then he says, what do we do with instances like a person who says, Beit HaShechita Roteach, when someone shechs an animal, and we said that the Beit HaShechita is considered to be like it was hot, and it's absorptive. So then, Kolef, you have to peel it off. Why over there do we not say that to leave over Kedei Netilah? Because there was fat on the knife, and the fat on the knife then, or whatever was on the knife, now affects the animal. The Tosfot says that Shani Otom, the Shamnonit Shalasakin, Davar Mu'at Hu. It is a very small amount of fat. The fats only have this impact of affecting everything when they are of a significant nature. There's sufficient fat over here for it to spread all over the place. Ini, is that really true? Vamaravuna di shitzalo bechelbo. If you have a goat that you are roasting in its fat, asor lechol afilu mirosh ozno. You can't even eat from the edge of its ear. The Gemara says, that's not a question. Shiny chalef de mepapeya. Chalef is different because it goes everywhere. Chalef has this capacity to bubble up or to penetrate all areas. It moves everywhere and flavors everything. So that's the difference. In our case over here, where you're roasting it, you're just talking about a regular roasting of a leg. Over there, the chalef is not going to be an issue. We'll discuss why not. Whatever chalef could have been an issue is not going to be an issue. By the gdi, when you put it on, we assume that the chalef that was asur, that wasn't taken out of the gdi, then spreads to the entirety of the gdi. And Rashi points out that the fact that it goes all the way to the ear and you can't eat the ear is because there's no chalev around the ear that's asur. Nevertheless, because you left in the fats that were asurim and then you roasted it, you assume those fats travel through the entirety of the gdi. Now the Tosfot says, don't just tell me it's the ear because the ear is at the bottom. And it goes through the Mishnayot by the Gemara. It's in the first parakeh in Shabbat. It's also in the Gemara in Pesachim about how they roasted the Korban of Pesach. Because they used to not have the animal on a spit like we would think spinning around like that. But they used to have the stick upright. And then the animal would be facing down. The mouth would be facing down. So don't tell me the reason that the ear is asur is because the fats are dripping downwards and it affects the ear. But had it been the other way around, it was facing upwards, that would not be the case. He says that's not what the Gemara is saying over here. The Gemara is saying over here that it moves no matter what. The fat moves everywhere, and it moves up and down. It's not just in a downward direction, and it affects everything in the animal. He says even if the roach was the mala, that the chelev would be mepapeya. And now he says, umash noagim, the minhag or the practice that we have, kishimochim basar harbe, when they do malicha on a large amount of basar, umeniach begigit, and they leave it in a large barrel where they're salting it. Upamim chaticha achat chetzia l'tochatzir, chetzia chutznatzir. And sometimes there's a piece of meat half in and half out. Bechotchin mash v'tochatzir. And we just cut out the part that's in the tzir. Umashlichin. And then we throw it out. Dasur. Umash chutznatzir mutar. And whatever was outside of the tzir, we say is still mutar. Velo amrinan. And we don't say she pape adam lamala. We don't say that the blood travels up that piece of meat and affects it. Be asur kol achaticha, and the remainder should be asur. Just like fat spread, why don't you say that blood spreads, reaches up to the upper part of the meat? He says, we don't worry about it in that instance because blood doesn't travel like fat and doesn't penetrate upwards. Therefore, you don't have to worry about the blood. Now, the fats that are in these pieces of meat that are absorbing the blood that's running around in the brine, they became asur, and then why don't we say chaticha naset nevela, and then those fats travel up the piece of meat. He says two things. One is, according to the Rabbeinu Ephraim that we mentioned before, that chaticha naset nevela is only true by basar b'chalav. Over here you don't have that. The dam that spreads and then causes flavoring of the meat, that doesn't change the meat into nevela, and therefore the part that's outside is not affected by it. So according to that Rabbeinu Ephraim, then there's nothing to speak about why the part that was outside the tzir is okay. But according to the others who say that a chaticha naset nevela applies everywhere, why don't we say the same thing over here, that it spreads the dam into the part of the piece that's outside the tzir. So Tosfot says in the end that you can't say that, because the only way that it's going to move the flavor over here is when it's in the tzir. Anything that's outside of that brine or that salt that it's sitting in, it can't move through the item. It's only to the areas where the isur reaches. The same way that whenever the chalav reaches, that's what makes it asur. Because chalav is a liquid. So too by the tzir, only to the places that the tzir reaches are going to be problematic. Since it didn't reach to the areas that are outside of the tzir, then we slice it off, and the part that was outside of the tzir is considered to be okay, and there's no mifapeya in that case. And then he brings from Abelezer Mimitz, who suggests that we don't say chatichat nasin nevela by half a piece, we only say it by a full piece. Once something is a chatichat nasin nevela, it can't then convert something else into chatichat nasin nevela. So over here we have the fats that were chatichat nasin nevela because of the blood. They then can't go and make the new piece of meat into chatichat nasin nevela, and then have that also affect the remainder of the piece that's outside of the brine. And therefore you can't do this and make half the piece chatichat nasin nevela and then affect the other half of the piece. It's either the whole piece is, or the whole piece isn't. And the last thing the Baal Tosafot say over here about mifapeya is that the mifapeya only applies to fats. It does not apply to gravy or to tzir ba'alma, because it's not shuman, it's not fat. Fat is the only thing that is mifapeya and moves like that. Liquids even don't move like that. It's got to be something like the shuman. So then Tosafot over here asks, but why don't you say the same thing by Gidon Asher? Gidon Asher, the fat around the Gidon Asher is also asur. So then why, when you roast it, don't we say those fats go everywhere? And then you have a problem in the leg, forgetting about taking out the gid, and then worrying about noting tam, the fat should make the whole thing asur. So the Tosafot brings two answers to that. One is that the Yerla Beinu Tam, the Shemno Shel Gid Einu Mifapeya. The fats around the gid are different types of fats, and they don't spread like regular fats that we find, or chelev that we find in other places. Although the brother, the Rivam, suggests that the fats around the gid and asher only asur mi derabanan. And when their Rabbanan made them asur, they just made them asur in their place, not asur for their flavor that spreads or for the fats that move away, and therefore the din of mipapeya, they were not machmir for by the case of the fats around the Gidon Asher. Okay, we're going to stop here on the top line of Tzadik Zayin Amud Aleph.